tracking the mounting toll from a superstorm. From APM, this is the Marketplace Midday Update podcast. I'm Jeff Horwich. It's Tuesday, the 30th of October. As you might imagine, we've been busy tracking this big old storm. So if you're like Lindsay Lohan and you just want people to stop talking about it, well, this might not be the podcast for you. But if you want to find out about nuclear power, gas prices, the New York subway system, and what's happened to all the billboards in the Northeast, we've been hard at work. Also, a little politics and a great piece on the trouble with trade to Mexico. Lots of good stuff ahead.
Investing, renting, sending your kid to college? Listen to the Marketplace Money Podcast. Find it on iTunes or at marketplace.org/podcasts.
Superstorm Sandy, that's its official designation now, has taken a human toll at this hour of 15 reported deaths in the U.S. 1 million people have been told to evacuate their homes. The economic toll is also becoming apparent as the East Coast nears midday. Flooding is widespread in parts of New York and New Jersey, and the rain's not over yet. The storm's moving inland and north. Marketplace's Mitchell Hartman has been tracking the numbers all through the day so far. Good morning, Mitchell.
Good to be here, Jeff.
So what are the latest numbers you've got on what we might call the human impact of Sandy so far?
Well, the latest estimates, more than 8 million homes and businesses are dark, the largest part in the Mid-Atlantic and New England. That's New Jersey, New York, Pennsylvania, Rhode Island, Connecticut. Of course, there's that massive flooding you were talking about. We do hear that oil refineries in the region didn't suffer very severe damage. They should be starting up again soon.
And what are the early estimates? And it is early yet, but the total economic impact of the storm?
Well, a first estimate pegs it in the low billions. That would make it worse than Irene last year, but probably nothing like Hurricane Andrew in Florida. That was in 1992, or obviously Katrina on the Gulf Coast in 2005. Now, the damage is usually about half covered by private insurance. That would be on homes, cars, businesses. The federal government ordinarily covers flooding losses. I reached Robert Hartwig. He's the president of the Insurance Information Institute.
In terms of the insured losses, is somewhere in the $5 to $10 billion range, and the overall economic losses perhaps being double that amount. There are several major unanswered questions: the extent of the storm surge along the Jersey Shore, and then another big wild card is the power outages in major parts of the New York metro area, including Lower Manhattan.
And Hartwig says one big unknown is how long it'll take businesses to reopen. The casinos at the Jersey Shore, the sandwich shops down by Wall Street.
And very quickly, Mitchell, another day of no trading for U.S. stocks. What's the outlook there?
Right. They will be testing the electronic trading system to hopefully open the market tomorrow, even if they can't fully operate the trading floor. Everyone wants to be able to open trade on the last day of the month, since that's when fund managers adjust their portfolios.
All right. Marketplace's Mitchell Hartman, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
One of the most intriguing aspects of the storm has been the notion of America's biggest, busiest city brought to a standstill. New York is reckoning with power and transportation troubles on an unprecedented scale. My Morning Report colleague Jeremy Hobson has made it into our New York bureau, where we fortunately still have power. Good morning, Jeremy.
Morning, Jeff.
So what is the storm doing to you now in New York, and what is it like out there?
You know, there's still rain, still winds, there are still big wind gusts, but nothing like the wind gusts we were seeing last night that caused tree branches and entire trees to fall down all over the city. You walk around the streets this morning and there are trees down everywhere. The power is out below 39th Street in Manhattan, which is just such a strange sight to see all the street lights out and all of the power out in all of the buildings. You can't get your cell phone to work in that area, and to be in the middle of one of the largest cities in the world and not have communication and not have power is really an amazing thing.
As you walk around, can you see any glimmerings of economic life resuming, businesses reopening, stuff like that?
You know, in the parts of town where there is power, yes, you do see some businesses reopening, but they don't have supplies. They may not have employees because with the subways shut down, people can't get into Manhattan to work. So it's basically the people who are here. If your business happens to be run by somebody who lives around the corner, you're in good shape, but they might not have supplies. But below 39th Street, where the power is out, no. You don't see any businesses open.
We've been talking about this 14-foot storm surge that sent water through the streets. What can you tell about the extent of the water damage in New York?
You know, it sort of depends on the neighborhood. We've seen pictures of really bad flood damage in places like Red Hook in Brooklyn, down in Battery Park on the lower end of Manhattan. But the big concern, Jeff, is what that water did to the subways, because it's salt water, and the MTA has come out and said in the subway's 108-year history, they have never seen a disaster like this.
Mm. Marketplace Morning Report's Jeremy Hobson. Great to hear from you. Thanks.
Thanks, Jeff.
Okay, let's do the numbers. Well, U.S. stock and bond markets are closed, as we mentioned, maybe reopening tomorrow. That's the hope. Dozens of companies have decided to postpone their quarterly earnings releases. Avon, Ralph Lauren, and Martha Stewart are among those who've decided to wait out the storm. Stocks closed down in Tokyo, mixed in China, and higher in Europe on strong profits from oil giant BP and Deutsche Bank. Here in the U.S., the S&P Case-Shiller Index of home prices rose in August, 0.5%. It was the seventh straight month of home price increases. And CEO Tim Cook is shaking things up a little at Apple. The head of the company's mobile software unit is out. He reportedly refused to accept responsibility for trouble with Apple's new Maps software. The head of Apple's retail stores has also been asked to leave after just 7 months in the job. Well, you might wonder if we could add gas prices to the economic toll of the superstorm. AAA had forecast a gas price decline through the end of the year, barring, of course, unforeseen circumstances. Reporter David Weinberg looked into whether Sandy might qualify.
The Northeast is home to several large oil refineries, many of which are in the direct path of Hurricane Sandy.
So obviously any production coming out of those refineries will halt.
Beth Evans is an editorial director at the American oil news site Platts. The shutdown of those facilities in the Northeast could lead to a slight increase in gas prices for the region. But as Avery Ash of AAA points out, the Northeast actually consumes far more oil than it produces.
And so the expectation is that, you know, the impact on demand may and likely will outweigh the impact to supply.
That's because so many people will be staying home over the next few days, which means less driving. Ash says we may see a change in gas prices in places like the Gulf Coast, which supply much of the Northeast with their gas.
And you could see prices move a little bit lower there with the increased gasoline that they can't get up to the Northeast.
Ash says that's as long as there is a smooth restart to production in the Northeast. I'm David Weinberg from Marketplace.
Along with gas prices, you might naturally worry a little bit about all the nuclear power plants on the East Coast. Officials with the Oyster Creek nuclear plant in New Jersey say rising water levels from the storm could affect the water intake system that circulates cooling water through the plant. There is an emergency backup system at the ready. Nuclear Regulatory Commission spokesman Scott Burnell says plants have had time to prepare for Sandy.
We've had our NRC inspectors on site at all of the potentially affected plants, keeping watch over what the plants have been doing, and everything has gone according to plan.
There are about 24 nuclear power plants in the path of the storm. Well, businesses in the path of Sandy are taking whatever measures they can to avoid damage. That goes for the country's biggest owner of billboards. Clear Channel has dispatched crews around the East Coast as a precautionary measure. Here's Marketplace's Dan Gorenstein.
Drivers along I-95 in Philadelphia can see something they don't usually see, a billboard sign with no billboard.
Just like people tying up their boats in the harbors and people taping up their windows.
Clear Channel's Brian Parker explains, when a hurricane hits, removing the sign is the best way to minimize damage.
When you remove the copy and the panel sections out of that frame, so to speak, sort of like taking the picture out of a frame, the wind will blow through it and there won't be any wind resistance to damage the sign structure.
Parker says new sign structures can run anywhere from $50,000 to $250,000. With that financial incentive and an interest in making sure no billboard falls on someone's house, Clear Channel crews scramble to take down more than 150 signs across the East Coast. Parker says it's a pretty quick process.
We simply roll that up or fold it up into a nice square, and then we lash that onto the catwalks.
A quick look at images online shows that Sandy's chewed up a few billboards, a crunched, crumpled one in Boston, another shredded in Atlantic City. Billboards, of course, exist to get as many eyeballs as possible. Parker says damaged signs are bad for business. I'm Dan Gorenstein for Marketplace.
Looking for a good read? Visit the Big Book blog at marketplace.org. Listen to author interviews and read excerpts from the Marketplace bookshelf. Online at marketplace.org/thebigbook.
Across the eastern U.S., evacuation orders have affected around 1 million people. In New York City, though, the problem is just a little bit different. Folks are kind of stuck at home. As we mentioned earlier, the country's most extensive subway system has been put thoroughly out of commission by Sandy. Mitchell Moss is the director of the Rudin Center for Transportation at NYU, and he's joining us from his home in New York City. Good to talk to you.
Good morning.
How much do you know now about the extent of the damage to the subway system?
We know that 7 tunnels that carry subways under the East River are flooded. We do know that the subway system is 108 years old. This is a system which was built over many years and has been maintained very well. But salt water does not mix well with a subway system that's underground, and therefore we now have to assess the damage from the salt water intrusion into the subway tunnels.
What is it about the salt water that does particular damage?
Well, it can corrode electrical parts, for example. And it also can short out much of the systems, the signaling system. So they have to pump out the water, and of course, doing that takes time.
How much time do you think we might be talking about?
Well, no one knows yet the extent of the damage. So the subway system is going to require both an assessment and then a phasing in of the tunnels as they are made available to people.
All these questions are difficult while the conditions are still unclear and the system is so old. But do you have any idea what repairs might cost?
I think the repair costs are really going to depend on the extent of the damage. And so I think it's really the loss of business activity, the loss of economic activity. You know, we're living in a city which has major hospitals that are not able to function at full equipment level. We have enormous amount of, we have 50 million tourists a year who come to New York. The hotels are filled now, but they're largely filled with people who are staying overnight in order to go to work easily.
Right. Well, let's say this takes weeks or months. What is New York culturally and functionally without its subway?
Well, New York never stops because, remember, the subway system is one part of a transportation system. So people are going to be biking to work. Some will be walking over the bridges. Others will be driving in. And so what's happening is that people are living their lives in their local communities because much of the city has, most of New York has power. They have water. They don't have subway service.
Mitchell Moss directs the Rudin Center for Transportation at NYU. Thanks for your time.
Thank you.
The storm is moving inland and will continue to have effects, and we'll be keeping track of them. Of course, there is this election coming up 1 week from today. Mitt Romney's campaign is out with an ad in Ohio that says he would do a better job handling the American auto industry than President Obama. That kind of claim is hardly unusual in a campaign, right? What's making waves, though, is that the ad calls out a specific company, Chrysler. Dan Bobkoff reports.
This is the ad's key line.
Obama took GM and Chrysler into bankruptcy and sold Chrysler to Italians who are going to build Jeeps in China.
Well, yes, Chrysler is majority owned by Fiat. And yes, it's hoping to resume Jeep production in China, but not at the expense of U.S. workers, as the ad implies. Just a few years after bailout and bankruptcy, Chrysler is adding production in the U.S. as well. Quarterly profit rose 80% last quarter. Paul Ingracia is deputy editor-in-chief at Reuters, and he says the Romney ad is simplistic.
Chrysler is a global company, and they should build cars where it makes most sense and they can make profits.
Last year, Chrysler paid back its government loans, and a healthcare trust for auto workers still owns a big chunk of the company. So Ingracia says profits made anywhere in the world will
go to fund health benefits for retired UAW members.
A Chrysler spokesman says he was, quote, surprised when he saw the Romney ad. In New York, I'm Dan Bobkoff for Marketplace.
Trade between the United States and Mexico has grown fivefold in the last 20 years since the North American Free Trade Agreement came into being. Every day, goods worth more than $1 billion move across our southern border. But the trucks that carry those goods can still be stuck for hours waiting to cross. In our latest installment of our Fronteras Desk series on NAFTA, here's reporter Monica Ortiz Uribe.
The World Trade Bridge in Laredo, Texas, is the most important commercial crossing along the southern border. Some 5,000 trucks cross here every day. They move everything from cornflakes to weed eaters to Volkswagen bugs. Gene Garza heads up field operations for Customs and Border Protection in South Texas.
World Trade Bridge was actually open in April of 2000. Prior to that, there was no bridge here. There was nothing out here. This was just farmland.
Since NAFTA, the number of trucks crossing through Laredo has tripled. Even after a recent bridge expansion, the time it takes to cross can range between 1 to 5 hours. That's partially because inspections have intensified since 9/11. Any truck can be singled out for an X-ray check or a lengthy manual inspection.
We have to facilitate the commercial traffic coming in, but we also have to make sure that our borders are secure.
Then there's infrastructure. The biggest obstacle to updating our current ports of entry and building new ones is the lack of federal funding. Chris Wilson researches trade for the Woodrow Wilson Center.
Customs and Border Protection has identified a $6 billion deficit between where things are now and where they need to be to keep up with all the people and goods that are flowing across the border every day.
There has been some progress. There's a new commercial port of entry in Arizona and another under construction in West Texas. In the past 2 years, U.S.-Mexico trade has grown by a record 23%. But without infrastructure updates, Wilson says both countries lose out.
It cuts into the competitiveness of manufacturing in North America, and it means that we have less jobs, less trade, less exports, and those are things that are really important right now to our economy.
To get things moving, business leaders on both sides of the border have started to invest in infrastructure themselves. For example, a new privately funded crossing is in the works outside San Diego. It will link business travelers and tourists directly to the Tijuana airport. Without federal dollars, the future of cross-border trade may now be in the hands of those who reap its profits. In Laredo, I'm Monica Ortiz Uribe for Marketplace.
As we wrap up here, not a whole lot of funny stuff to talk about when the hurricane moves in, naturally. This one little item is notable, though. We've all maybe been to a local city council or a school board meeting where somebody goes on and on. Well, in Riverside, California, maybe they take it a little more seriously than in some places. Last week, a 60-year-old woman rose to speak at a city council meeting. She was talking about a local contract for sludge hauling, whatever that issue happens to be. She went over her allotted 3 minutes, and they asked her to stop. And when she persisted, the cops on hand moved in, cuffed her, and took her away after a bit of a scuffle. Sounds like quite a scene. The woman faces a misdemeanor for disrupting the meeting, but local politicians seem pretty embarrassed by the whole thing. The mayor says police will no longer be able to make arrests unless he calls for it specifically. But you know, they may be onto something in Riverside. Next time we have presidential debates, let's have those two cops stand off in the wings, just in case those folks run over, which they never do. That's all for today's Marketplace Midday Update podcast. I'm Jeff Horwich, and this is APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.